Good morning, everyone. Today, Sunday, is the 616th day of war. This morning, our staff reporters in London and Rome give you the latest war news. First, we bring you the news in England. Go ahead, London. Ladies and gentlemen, we are unable to bring you London direct at this moment. Therefore, we bring you these communiques and bulletins which have just arrived. London has suffered one of the hardest raids of the war during the night. The Germans raced across the Channel in bright moonlight just after midnight, and for 6 hours they blasted the city without mercy. Roaring fires covered whole blocks in London, and firemen had an almost impossible task in checking flames that shot through scores of buildings. The Germans stayed over London until just before dawn, pouring down thousands of incendiaries and their most powerful explosives. The raid was in reprisal for RAF attacks on Berlin and other German cities Friday night. When daylight finally came, a gray pall of smoke hung over the battered city, and there were scenes of great destruction in London. There has been no estimate of the number of persons killed, but the government has issued a communique which says that the number of casualties is high. The British say that 33 of the German raiders were shot down. This brings to 158 the number of Nazi warplanes destroyed during the first 11 days of May, and 124 of that number have been bagged during the vicious night assaults. Although Germany used hundreds of planes in the attack on London, she sent other bombers to strike at many other points in England. However, the British say these other raids caused no extensive damage, although a small number of people were killed. But the Germans declare that these other raids were successful, too. They say that an important airplane fuselage plant and motorworks at Coventry was destroyed by direct hits. At Birmingham, two aluminum plants are said to have been smashed, and numerous fires are claimed to have been started in the harbor areas of Middlesbrough, Hartlepool, and Barrow. The Nazis say also that three British airfields were blasted. And while the Nazis were bombing England, the Royal Air Force smashed again at German cities. Strong RAF forces were used, and the British say they attacked Hamburg, Bremen, Emden, and Rotterdam. Berlin also was hit. There is no indication that the raid on the German capital was a full-scale attack. The raids are believed to have centered on shipyards and industrial areas at Hamburg. And further in London, familiar buildings passed every day in normal routine, a stately church or the shop where you brought your cigarettes yesterday, are empty shells. In flame-gutted buildings, fire licked at mounds of bedraggled furniture and tumbled timbers. Firemen did not waste time on such smoldering mounds. They had more important work to do. Empty window frames glowed red like bright stained glass in the gray light of a chill morning. Firemen in tin hats and oilskin hoods, their faces streaked with black, still played hoses on some buildings where something possibly might be saved or where quick work might prevent the spread of flames. Mile upon mile of hose lines crisscrossed the streets, and pedestrians picked their way through showers of water spurting from swollen canvas hoses. In one section, smoke billowed like London's traditional pea soup fogs, so thick that it was difficult to see the opposite side of the street. Policemen loomed in the murky darkness to motion pedestrians to go on. London's streets, usually deserted on a Sunday morning, were filled today with excited, gossiping crowds, exchanging their experiences over a night of terror during which hundreds of German bombers dropped thousands of high explosives and incendiary bombs on the capital, despite spectacular work by the Royal Air Force's night fighters. And there you have a brief summary of the communications from the night in England. And now, let's hear from David Anderson, our reporter in Italy. Go ahead, Rome.
Hello, NBC. This is David Anderson speaking from Rome. The Italian High Command report just issued says that units of the Italian Air Force attacked enemy naval formations in the Western Mediterranean. Two destroyers, it states, were badly damaged. One enemy plane was shot down. During an attack by Italian planes on Malta, the communique states, a Sunderland plane was set on fire. One Italian plane, which was reported shot down on Thursday, has now been found. In North Africa, a successful action by Italo-German units was carried out in the Solom region. In the Aegean, our troops have occupied the islands of Zea, Serpenta, Syra, and Mekono, thus completing the occupation of the Cyclades group. In East Africa, Considerable artillery activities reported in the Alagdi sector. Enemy aeroplanes attacked Catania, states the communique. Some damage was caused, and some persons were killed. For the first time, King Victor Emmanuel touched foot on Albanian soil yesterday. That is a central theme running through all Rome newspapers this morning. Despite unfavorable weather conditions, the King of Italy flew to Tirana yesterday, where he was received with a great deal of pomp and ceremony. But not only was the king there, Foreign Minister Calciano, General Cavallero, head of the Italian troops in Albania, Admiral Sportiello, and other army and navy men were also present. One of the first acts on the arrival of the sovereign was the presentation of the traditional bread and salt, a sign of the fidelity of the Albanian people. The king then reviewed detachments of Italian troops stationed in Albania. Perhaps the most important part of the king's day in Albania yesterday was when he presided at a meeting of the Albanian cabinet. Following this meeting, the king signed a decree giving amnesty to all political prisoners. Today, the king is scheduled to visit three churches in Tirana, representing the three religious sects in that country: the Muslim, the Orthodox, and the Catholic. Commenting on the visit of the king to Albania, Rome newspapers emphasized two points. Firstly, it was the first visit of the king to this territory since it became a part of the Italian Empire. And secondly, it showed the complete political unity of Albania and the mother country. The arrest of 90 Italian citizens in New York has brought a flow of strong articles to the Rome press. It is pointed out here that these persons, members of the Italian pavilion at the World Fair, had no way of getting back to Italy. One newspaper headline runs, "The bellicose Americans have begun their pursuit on the Italians." Perhaps the strongest criticism comes from the handling of these Italians. The police, it is said, treated the Italians with the utmost brutality, forcing them to pass in front of motion picture cameras so that the event could be documented for further reference. One writer assumes that the American government is going to use these pictures in their alarmistic campaign to force intervention. One paper points out that two restaurant waiters were arrested. Despite the pleas of the restaurant manager, also an Italian, these men were not even permitted to change their working clothes and receive their pay before being ushered out to Ellis Island. And speaking of the arrest of these Italians, the paper also drawing a parallel between this case and the recent arrests of German in America. "It is all a sign of growing hostility in America," says one paper. And they represent a prelude to direct American intervention. The recent naval encounters in the Mediterranean has prompted Virginia Guida to write an editorial in La Voce d'Italia today on the Battle of the Mediterranean. "It is," he says, "no less important in this war than the Battle of the Atlantic. The Atlantic," he points out, "is the lifeline of the British Isles, but the Mediterranean is the lifeline of the British Empire. Without the Empire," he says, "the British Isles have no significance. And for this very reason, the British have concentrated large naval forces in the Mediterranean. But the Mediterranean and the Red Sea are also essential factors in supplying the European continent and as a direct means of communication with Africa and Asia. For this reason," he says, "England has tried to extend her bases in the Mediterranean. An example of this," he says, "is a blockade established by Britain with the aid of Greece and Yugoslavia. Since November," says Mr. Guida, "England has concentrated her efforts against Italy with a hope in mind of assuring her vital means of communication. But Italy has resisted. The Mediterranean is vital to Great Britain for another reason," claims Guida. "The British are protecting India against a possible Axis move into Egypt and the Red Sea. But," he says, "the Axis has nothing to worry about. With a new phase of the Battle of the Mediterranean, which began April the 5th, the Axis gained the upper hand in that region, and they intend to maintain it." Popolo di Roma speaks this morning of the imminent intervention of the United States into war. "If the United States wants to make an impression on the Axis powers," the paper says, "their efforts are in vain. It is known in Rome and Berlin," the paper continues, "that a formal intervention of the United States into the conflict will not change the situation. A formal declaration of war on the part of the United States will only clarify the situation. The practical effects of American intervention," the paper concludes, "are already anticipated in Axis circles, and
proper preparations have been made. This is David Anderson returning you now to NBC in New York.
And now to continue, we have a late item from Berlin. British motorized troops occupied the garrison of Rutbah in western Iraq May 9th, the official news agency reported today in a dispatch from Beirut, Syria. Quoting the Iraqi High Command, and the mechanized forces supported by the Royal Air Force attacked the garrison for 20 hours, the Iraqi command's 12th communique said. Then the Iraqi troops retreated, although already counterattacking. The communique said the enemy's position at Seneladiban was critical and was under artillery fire by Iraq troops. Only one building there remained undamaged, it was said. No changes were reported on the South Front. The Iraqi Air Force carried out reconnaissance flights May 9th, and a strong Air Force formation took over the defense of Baghdad. Three British planes dropped four bombs at Rashid Airport near Baghdad, but were wide of their targets, the communique said. Enemy planes repeatedly carried out reconnaissance flights over the capital as well as over Iraqi troop concentrations. And that bulletin was from Berlin. And now we have a late item from San Francisco. In San Francisco, three U.S. Navy blueprints used at the Bethlehem shipyard were found today in possession of an alien German arrested for drunkenness. Federal agents began an immediate investigation. The man, Frederick Rice, 43, of Oakland, an iron worker at the Bethlehem plant, was sentenced to 30 days in jail on the drunk charge. When he was searched at the police station, officers found one blueprint in his pocket and later discovered two more in his automobile. Rice told Municipal Judge Herbert Kaufman, "One blueprint, I don't know where it came from. The others I had to have to work with. Somebody must have thrown one from another car into my car. I had to move my car yesterday, and that may have been how it happened." Patrolman Don Luce and Gerald Reichert, who made the arrest, said the blueprints were of ship engine room pipelines. Nat Pieper, FBI agent, assigned two government men to the case, asserting, "In these days when a man has plans that he can't explain, we have to investigate." Rice said he served as a seaman on a German mine layer in the World War, shipped from Germany on a freighter in 1923, and jumped ship at New Orleans in January 1924. He said he had registered as an alien, but had never applied for citizenship because of the irregularity of his entrance into this country. And further foreign news, this bulletin again from Berlin. Germany imposed its general news blackout again last night for the first time in 22 days. But reopening of communications today failed to produce any sensational news. Communications with the outside world were shut down about 8 p.m. and remained closed until about 7 a.m. Such a blackout was imposed first April 6th, prior to the start of the Balkan campaign. Last night's news blockade was not announced officially. Although correspondents awaited startling disclosures today, there was little sensation in the morning papers. Most of them gave prominence to Britain's announcement of her shipping losses for April. The official Nazi organ carried a headline, "London falsifies ship loss figures as usual." News from Iraq, with part of which we have just read, was carried on the inside pages of most of the papers. And so, ladies and gentlemen, we have brought you a summary of the foreign news bulletins and a report direct from David Anderson, our reporter in Italy. Throughout the day, we invite you to remain tuned to this station. You'll get good entertainment, and you will be apprised of each new development of this fast-changing world. This is the National Broadcasting Company.